I'm Jen Dierenwater. I am a citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. I never felt welcome in the queer community. The biphobia and erasure I've experienced was so severe, I stopped going to queer spaces. As I've become more disabled, it is blatantly clear that I'm still not wanted in most spaces.
I'm not sure how to deliver a worthy keynote address in only 10 minutes while the world is on fire, but I will do my best.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. European Rights Council urges conversion therapy ban, Russia declares ILGA undesirable, and Indigiqueer Creating Change keynoter calls for radical inclusion. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 31st, 2026. European Union member states are being urged to ban conversion therapy. 71 members of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe voted on January 28th in favor of the resolution. 26 voted against, and 2 members abstained. The Council of Europe is the EU's independent human rights body. The resolution to ban the discredited cure is non-binding. Sponsoring UK Labour MP Kate Osborne wrote, "Conversion practices have no scientific basis and have harmful consequences on the individuals to them. They induce or strengthen feelings of shame, guilt, self-disgust, and worthlessness, and lead to increased rates of depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, suicidal ideation, and suicide attempts." Osborne stands firmly with the scientific community, where the claim that sexual orientation or gender identity can be changed through a combination of prayer and counseling is widely condemned. Thousands of auto-generated emails opposed the inclusion of transgender people in the ban, and the gender-critical group Sex Matters lobbied heavily against it. They maintain they are trying to protect trans young people who may be confused about their sex. The Society for Research in Child Development refutes that assertion. In their studies, trans youth are as consistent in their identification as their cisgender counterparts. The queer advocacy group ILGA World says the conversion therapy ban establishes an international human rights standard and provides detailed guidance for national authorities. ILGA World's press statement issues the challenge. Responsibility now shifts to governments to translate the Assembly's recommendations into law and policy.
That could be one reason the Russian government finds ILGA World so undesirable. The Federation of more than 2,000 affiliated groups revealed that it is now officially designated an undesirable foreign organization, as per a January 21st announcement on the Justice Ministry website. The announcement reportedly also calls 8 other organizations in Europe and the United States undesirable, including the Dutch organization Before Ukraine and George Washington University. Russian citizens found guilty of working with undesirable groups face up to 6 years in prison. The undesirable law was first adopted in 2015 and was expanded in 2021 and 2024. It allows government authorities to target groups that are deemed a threat to the foundation of the constitutional order of the Russian Federation, the defense capability of the country, or the security of the state. The original law was blasted by the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights because it failed to provide a clear legal definition or criteria for how the determination of such a threat will be conducted. They warned that it may have serious implications for civil society, particularly human rights defenders. The new strike against ILGA is just the latest Russian effort to suppress queer advocacy. In 2023, the country's Supreme Court labeled what it called the international LGBT movement an extremist organization. ILGA World's membership covers more than 170 countries and territories, including groups in Russia. Executive Director Julia Ert was defiant in response to the designation. In her words, "Designating human rights groups undesirable is outlandish and cynical, but no matter how much governments will try to legislate LGBTI people out of existence, movements will stay strong and committed, and solidarity remains alive across borders. And together, we will continue building a more just world for everyone."
Budapest Mayor Gergely Kiricsonyi declares he's gone from being a proud suspect to a proud defendant. Despite the slipping popularity of Hungary's authoritarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, his government is following through on a December threat to criminally charge the mayor for defying its ban on pride celebrations. Kiricsonyi declared it to be a municipal event and therefore not impacted by a national ban. Up to 250,000 people participated last June in what turned out to be one of the largest LGBTQ pride marches in the country's history. Kiricsonyi is accused of organizing and leading a public gathering despite the police ban. He faces an undetermined fine. Prosecutors asked a court on January 28th for a summary judgment in lieu of trial. The 50-year-old Kiricsonyi was elected mayor of Budapest in 2019 and has been a progressive thorn in Orban's side ever since. A longtime champion of LGBTQ plus rights, he's defiantly flown both the rainbow pride flag and the Ukrainian flag at City Hall. Kiricsonyi did not mince words about the charges on social media, saying, "It seems that this is the price we pay in this country when we stand up for our own freedom and that of others."
Missouri's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care has been unanimously upheld by the state's Supreme Court. It also agreed that Medicaid should not pay for anyone's gender-affirming care. The measure was enacted by the legislature's Republican majority and signed into law in 2023 by Republican Governor Mike Parson. The ACLU of Missouri and the queer-defending Lambda Legal brought the challenge on behalf of three families of transgender young people, medical providers, and LGBTQ advocacy organizations. They argued that the law should be subject to heightened scrutiny, a more demanding legal standard applied to cases involving the classification of individuals by specific characteristics, such as gender. Both the lower court and the state high court rejected that argument, according to the Missouri Independent. The plaintiffs claimed that the law discriminates on the basis of sex and transgender status. However, Judge Kelly Broniak wrote for the court that it is only based on medical use and age. Broniak concluded, "There is no fundamental right to seek care the legislature has prohibited, because the law does not infringe on a fundamental right. Rational basis review is appropriate." The Missouri High Court ruling echoes last year's U.S. Supreme Court decision that upheld Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming health care for transgender people under the age of 18. It ruled that the ban does not discriminate on the basis of sex or transgender status. Missouri's highest court also rejected arguments that the Medicaid ban violates the state constitution. Broniak wrote that it only affects government spending. She believes that adults in the state should just pay out of pocket for medically necessary transition treatment. The litigants are still deciding whether to appeal.
Finally,
too many Americans are afraid of what the federal government will do to them instead of being confident in what it can do for them.
Bree Fram is running to represent a Northern Virginia district in the U.S. Congress. She was the highest-ranking transgender member of the U.S. Armed Forces before her forced retirement.
"After 9/11, my country called. I served 23 years wearing the flag on my shoulder, reaching the rank of colonel. But then, Donald Trump fired me, not for my performance, but because of who I am."
Fram was placed on administrative leave last June pending separation under the Defense Department's newly reinstated transgender ban. She served in the Air Force in Iraq and Qatar during George W. Bush's so-called Operation Iraqi Freedom. She came out as trans in 2016. Donald Trump instituted the ban on trans service members during his first presidential term, but the Biden administration overturned it. Fram subsequently joined the Space Force and was the first trans service member in the U.S. military to be promoted to colonel in 2024. The 46-year-old political newbie raised more than $100,000 from at least 400 donors across 46 states in less than 24 hours after announcing her candidacy, according to Metro Weekly.
I'm running for Congress to make opportunity affordable, to protect our basic rights, and ensure we have a government that works for you. I'm not going to run away from my oath to the Constitution.
That's NewsWrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending January 31st, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Was the music of Grammy-winning two-spirit interdisciplinary performance artist Ty Defoe, who was honored with the Indigenous Lozen and Detesti Warrior Award at the 2026 Creating Change Conference. An Indigiqueer welcome greeted about 2,000 activists, organizers, and advocates to Washington, D.C. for the annual Queer Political Strategizing event held by the National LGBTQ Task Force. The theme of the January 20 to 25th conference was Unstoppable, and it featured plenary sessions, day-long institutes on organizing for specific affinity and interest groups, a cruise, game room, and other special events, along with a wide array of resource spaces. For its opening general session, Creating Change turned to local Indigenous leadership and heard a keynote address by Jen Dierenwater.
Osio, hello. I'm Jen Dierenwater. I am a citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the founding executive director of Crushing Colonialism, an Indigenous-operated 501c3 here in the so-called U.S. I'll begin with a brief visual description of myself as a disability access measure. I am a white-coated, femme-appearing Indigenous two-spirit. I have chin-length brown hair with the right side of my head partially shaved, and am wearing a black dress with very long native iridescent earrings that hang below my shoulders, black glasses, and a black and blue keffiyeh. I'm very honored to be here with you all today. However, I'm not sure how to deliver a worthy keynote address in only 10 minutes while the world is on fire, but I will do my best. It was in 2001 when I realized I was bisexual at 22 years old. I was in college in LA with no plans to ever return to my home of rural Oklahoma in Texas. I came flying out of the closet, draped in the bisexual pride flag as if I were Captain Bisexual here to fight all biphobia. Don't ask, don't tell was still military policy, but I don't believe that we as queer people should serve a fascist state. But that is a conversation for another time. Marriage equality didn't exist at the time.
It still doesn't for disabled people, including us queer Crips, as we can't marry without risking our life-saving disability and health care benefits. I personally don't believe in the institution of marriage as a state activity, but once again, that's a conversation for another time. When I entered the job market at only 16 years old, queer people could still legally be fired in the so-called US. When I entered the job market after college, only about half the states in the country offered any protections from anti-queer discrimination in 2003. But hey, we had Will and Grace, Queer as Folk, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, with more queer characters, mostly all white, able-bodied, gay cis men with the occasional white lesbian popping up across media. Things were bad, but there was a sense of hope that we could win. Maybe I was just young and naive, but as my family would say, I was full of piss and vinegar. However, I never felt welcome in the queer community. It has never felt like home. The biphobia and erasure, as well as femphobia, I've experienced was so severe, I stopped going to queer spaces. It was clear that I wasn't wanted. As I've become more disabled, it is blatantly clear that I'm still not wanted in most spaces. Then there's the anti-Native racism that is so rife in queer community that still to this day, I rarely grace the doorstep of any queer establishment, organization, or event in so-called DC, a city I've resided in for the last 10 years. To say it's bad is a gross understatement. As I've aged, I've gained the wondrous act of not giving a f***. So I can no longer waste my highly finite time and energy to sit at tables where I'm not welcomed and embraced with all the love that I deserve. Frankly, I wouldn't be at this conference if it weren't for Dandelion and the incredible Indigiqueer relatives and ancestors that are sharing the stage with me. Being both Native and queer often feels impossible. Due to colonization, many of our hetero and cis Native relatives have forsaken the traditional ways of numerous tribes that have expansive gender identities and completely different ways of viewing gender roles and sexuality within the nations. Over the years, though, I'm thankful to have built a wonderful, amazing community of Two-Spirit Indigiqueer family. Please, again, clap for these folks. I've known almost everyone on this stage for years, and they are all incredible people doing amazing work for our communities. So over the years, I'm thankful to have built this community. In 2017, I returned to the circle as a Two-Spirit. Feel free to Google these words, Two-Spirit and Indigiqueer, if you don't know them. You might even find some of my writing on the topic. As a baby queer, I saw some progress in the fights for our rights, but as so often is the case for minoritized people, every step forward has meant a battering ram into our homes and communities. I want to talk a bit now about queer kin from communities outside of my own. In 2025, Crushing Colonialism, an Indigenous arts, media, and storytelling nonprofit that I founded, hosted our Decolonize Beats Indigenous World Pride series here in so-called DC during World Pride. We faced numerous obstacles, such as being dropped from our original venue, the Smithsonian National Museum of American History. We hustled and accepted a prestigious two-year residency at the Kennedy Center. Yeah. Our World Pride event was one of the very first dropped when the orange buffoon took over. As Indigenous people have been forced to do for hundreds of years, we hustled and made our events happen and even won an international award and were invited and were the first Indigenous people ever to speak at Euro Pride last year. However, the measures we had to take to ensure the safety and security of all were absurd. We had immigration attorneys on standby for all points of entry for our international speakers and performers. We had lawyers on standby in DC. We had numerous check-ins with our people while they were traveling. We had a trusted community internal security team in plain clothes throughout our events, watching for anything suspicious. We had numerous safety, security, and know your rights trainings and documents available in English, Spanish, and Brazilian Portuguese, even if that meant we had to spend the little money that we had on translations. We hired an outside security team, brought in medics and de-escalators, had escape routes planned if necessary, and so much more. All of this for an arts and performance series, but it was necessary. The so-called U.S. has always been a violent fascist nation. It was born through genocide, enslavement, misogyny, xenophobia, and anti-queerness, and a lot more. It has maintained the status quo to this day through control, humiliation, and violence. Many like to say the U.S. is now like the Nazis, but the Nazis learned from us. The concentration camps were based on the reservation system. We find ourselves today in the belly of the beast, where horrific decisions are made daily, where war criminals reside freely, some of whom may even be queer. A drone is still a drone, even with a rainbow sticker. We must fight for all of our queer and indigenous relatives globally, from religious and anti-queer oppression, environmental destruction, colonialism, imperialism, multinational corporations, and fascist nation states. This, of course, includes fighting for our siblings in Sudan, Congo, Palestine, Venezuela, Somalia, Greenland, and beyond. Every single member of the queer community matters, regardless of where they live, and the opinion of who's in the aptly named White House, a home built by stolen people on stolen land to house war criminals. We've all heard the enraging and heartbreaking story of Renee Good, but many Black, Brown, Asian, and Indigenous people came before her for centuries. Indigenous people are still kidnapped and removed by the federal government. On the homelands of the Dakota in Minneapolis, there has been a reign of terror impacting the Native community. It has reached a point where the American Indian movement are patrolling the Native American Cultural Corridor and the Little Earth neighborhood, which is the only urban Native housing complex in the so-called U.S. AIM was founded in Minneapolis in the 1970s as a result of the police brutality by the Minneapolis Police Department on Native people. Our Indigenous relatives from the Tohono O'odham tribal nation, who span across the border of the so-called U.S. and Mexico, have known the terror of Border Patrol for many, many years. There has also recently been a series of arrests and confessions of ICE agents for a sex trafficking ring. Indigenous women and children have some of the highest rates per capita of sexual violence and are often trafficked in this country across the borders of so-called Canada and Mexico. To say I'm terrified for our relatives doesn't do justice to the centuries of intergenerational and historical trauma that has forcefully taken up space in my body. Make no mistake, whether local cops, BIA, DHS, or ICE, this is a threat to all of us. The violence the trans, two-spirit, and non-binary community is facing has partially been a litmus test for what the government can get away with on all queer people. This could have been avoided altogether if white cis people, including white privileged queers, had simply listened to the rest of us. Of course, our lives would have to matter for you all to listen and for that to occur. However, if we do not, as an entire community, queer kin fighting side by side with justice for all at the core of our work, then I fear for us all. We cannot rely on the government or supposedly queer-friendly corporations or even nonprofits to save us, as these systems were not made by us or for us and have been designed to extract money and labor out of all of us until it kills us. And even then,
They make money off of us when we're dead. We've lost so many of our beloved since 2020. I've grieved over the loss of countless brilliant and dedicated down-ass people fighting for so many. COVID, a lack of health care, state violence, and oppression were heavily responsible for these losses. In a different world, Next Benedict, Jonathan Joss, Koya White Hat Artichoker, Sarah Millery, Mushin Hendricks, Ali Jehon Makalintil, and Patty Byrne, and many others whose names we will most likely never know, would still all be with us today. I sit on the shoulders of giants. Those giants were human and deserved all of the love and supports they needed for a rich, healthy, happy life. I challenge you all to become involved in movement organizing, which I know many of you are, but, you know, if you can, do more. And I challenge you to also get involved in your local community's mutual aid groups that are truly rooted in intersectionality and community care. And if you see gaps in care, step up and fix them. And do not expect femmes and women and BIPOC folks to do all the labor, because we are tired. Do not forget all of the people, indigenous, disabled, rural, migrant, black, and beyond. When you think you've meaningfully included everyone, stop and look around, because I guarantee you have forgotten someone. We have years of institutional oppression to unlearn, but we must do it. I say this because we can and must do better, and we are out of time. There is no justice, no joy, no life for any queer person as long as one of us suffers. We must mourn and honor our dead, but we must fight like hell for the living and the seven generations to come. Wado, thank you.
That was Jen Dierenwater, Executive Director of Crushing Colonialism, speaking at the Unstoppable 2026 Creating Change Conference held by the National LGBTQ Task Force. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Michael LeBeau and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. Greg Gordon produced this week's Jen Dierenwater feature, with thanks to Kathy Renna and the National LGBTQ Task Force. Paul Simon and Ty Defoe performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listeners. New donors who made this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WJFF Jeffersonville, New York, 2SER Broadway, New South Wales, KGNU Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins, Ward, Colorado, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.